This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Narcissus in Chains, an Anita Blake vampire hunter novel by Laurel K. Hamilton. Read for you by Kimberly Alexis. 1. June had come in like its usual hot, sweaty self. But a freak cold front had moved in during the night, and the car radio had been full of the record low temperatures. It was only in the low 60s, not that cold, but after weeks of 80 and 90 plus, it felt downright frigid. My best friend, Ronnie Sims, and I were sitting in my Jeep with the windows down, letting the unseasonably cool air drift in on us. Ronnie had turned 30 tonight. We were talking about how she felt about the big 3-0, another girl talk. Considering that she's a private detective and I raise the dead for a living, it was pretty ordinary talk. Sex, guys, turning 30, vampires, werewolves, you know, the usual. We could have gone inside the house, but there is something about the intimacy of a car after dark that makes you want to linger. Or maybe it was the sweet smell of spring-like air coming through the windows, like the caress of some half-remembered lover.
"Okay, so? He's a werewolf. No one's perfect," Ronnie said. "Date him, sleep with him, marry him. My vote's for Richard."
"I know you don't like Jean-Claude."
"Don't like him?"
Her hands gripped the passenger side door handle, squeezing it until I could see the tension in her shoulders. I think she was counting to 10.
"If I killed as easily as you do, I'd have killed that son of a bitch 2 years ago, and your life would be a lot less complicated now."
That last was an understatement. But
I don't want him dead, Ronnie. "He's a vampire, Anita. He is dead."
She turned and looked at me in the dark. Her soft gray eyes and yellow hair had turned to silver and near white in the cold light of the stars. The shadows and bright reflected light left her face in bold relief, like some modern painting. But the look on her face was almost frightening. There was a fearful determination there. If it had been me with that look on my face, I'd have warned me not to do anything stupid, like kill Jean-Claude. But Ronnie wasn't a shooter. She'd killed twice, both times to save my life. I owed her. But she wasn't a person who could hunt someone down in cold blood and kill him. Not even a vampire. I knew this about her, so I didn't have to caution her. "I used to think I knew what dead was or wasn't, Ronnie." I shook my head. "The line isn't so clear-cut."
"He seduced you," she said.
I looked away from her angry face and stared at the foil-wrapped swan in my lap. Deerdorf's and Hart, where we'd had dinner, got creative with their doggy bags, foil-wrapped animals. I couldn't argue with Ronnie, and I was getting tired of trying. Finally, I said, "Every lover seduces you, Ronnie. That's the way it works." She slammed her hands so hard onto the dashboard it startled me, and must have hurt her.
"Damn it, Anita! It's not the same!"
I was starting to get angry. And I didn't want to be angry, not with Ronnie. I had taken her out to dinner to make her feel better, not to fight. Louis Fane, her steady boyfriend, was out of town at a conference, and she was bummed about that and about turning 30. So I'd tried to make her feel better, and she seemed determined to make me feel worse. "Look, I haven't seen either Jean-Claude or Richard for 6 months. I'm not dating either of them, so we can skip the lecture on vampire ethics."
"Now that's an oxymoron," she said.
"What is?" I asked.
"Vampire ethics," she said.
I frowned at her. "That's not fair, Ronnie."
"You are a vampire executioner, Anita. You are the one who taught me that they aren't just people with fangs. They are monsters."
I'd had enough. I opened the car door and slid to the edge of the seat. Ronnie grabbed my shoulder.
"Anita, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Please don't be mad."
I didn't turn around. I sat there with my feet hanging out the door, the cool air creeping into the closer warmth of the car. Then drop it, Ronnie. I mean, drop it. She leaned over and gave me a quick hug from behind.
I'm sorry. It's none of my business who you sleep with.
I leaned into the hug for a moment. That's right. It's not. Then I pulled away and got out of the car. My high heels crunched on the gravel of my driveway. Ronnie had wanted us to dress up, so we had. It was her birthday. It wasn't until after dinner that I'd realized her diabolical scheme. She'd had me wear heels and a nice little black skirt outfit. The top was actually, gasp, a well-fitted halter top.
Or would that be backless evening wear?
However pricey it was still a very short skirt and a halter top. Ronnie had helped me pick the outfit out about a week ago.
I should have known her innocent, oh, let's just both dress up, was a ruse.
There had been other dresses that covered more skin and had longer hemlines, but none that camouflaged the belly band holster that cut across my lower waist. I'd actually taken the holster along with us on the shopping trip, just to be sure. Ronnie thought I was being paranoid, but I don't go anywhere after dark, unarmed. Period. The skirt was just roomy enough and black enough to hide the fact that I wore the belly band and a Firestar 9mm. The top was heavy enough material, what there was of it, that you really couldn't see the handle of the gun under the cloth. All I had to do was lift the bottom of the top, and the gun was right there, ready to be drawn. It was the most user-friendly, dressy outfit I'd ever owned. Made me wish they made it in a different color so I could have two of them. Ronnie's plan had been to go to a club on her birthday. A dance club. Eek. I never went to clubs. I did not dance. But I went in with her. Yes, she got me out on the floor, mainly because her dancing alone was attracting too much unwanted male attention. At least with both of us dancing together, the would-be Casanovas stayed at a distance. Though saying I danced was inaccurate. I stood there and sort of swayed. Ronnie danced. She danced like it was her last night on Earth and she had to put every muscle to good use. It was spectacular and a little frightening. There was something almost desperate to it, as if Ronnie felt the cold hand of time creeping up faster and faster. Or maybe that was just me projecting my own insecurities. I'd turned 26 early in the year, and frankly, at the rate I was going, I probably wouldn't have to worry about hitting 30. Death cures all ills. Well, most of them. There had been one man who had attached himself to me instead of Ronnie. I didn't understand why. She was a tall, leggy blonde, dancing like she was having sex with the music. But he offered me drinks. I don't drink. He tried to slow dance. I refused. I finally had to be rude. Ronnie told me to dance with him. At least he was human. I told her that birthday guilt only went so far, and she'd used hers up. The last thing on God's green earth that I needed was another man in my life. I didn't have a clue what to do with the two I had already. The fact that they were, respectively, a master vampire and an Ulfric, werewolf king, was only part of the problem. That fact alone should let you know just how deep a hole I was digging. Or would that be already have dug? Yeah, already dug. I was about halfway to China and still throwing dirt up in the air. I'd been celibate for 6 months. So, as far as I knew, had they. Everyone was waiting for me to make up my mind, waiting for me to choose or decide something, anything. I'd been a rock for half a year because I'd stayed away from them. I hadn't seen them, in the flesh anyway. I had returned no phone calls. I had run for the hills at the first hint of cologne. Why such drastic measures? Frankly, because almost every time I saw them, I fell off the chastity wagon. They both had my libido, but I was trying to decide who had my heart. I still didn't know. The only thing I had decided was that it was time to stop hiding. I had to see them and figure out what we were all going to do. I'd decided 2 weeks ago that I needed to see them. It was the day that I refilled my birth control pill prescription and started taking it again. The very last thing I needed was a surprise pregnancy. That the first thing I thought of when I thought of Richard and Jean-Claude was to go back on birth control tells you something about the effect they had on me. You needed to be on the pill for at least a month to be safe, or as safe as you ever got. 4 more weeks. 5, to be sure. Then I'd call. Maybe. I heard Ronnie's heels running on the gravel.
Anita! Anita, wait! Don't be angry!
The thing was, I wasn't angry with her. I was angry with me. Angry that after all these months, I still couldn't decide between the two men. I stopped walking and waited for her, huddled in my little black skirt outfit, the little foil swan in my hands. The night had turned cool enough to make me wish I'd worn a jacket. When Ronnie caught up with me, I started walking again. I'm not mad, Ronnie. Just tired. Tired of you, my family, Dolph, Zerbrowski, everyone being so damned judgmental. My heels hit the sidewalk with sharp clacks. Jean-Claude had once said he could tell if I was angry just by the sound of my heels on the floor. Watch your step. You're wearing higher heels than I am. Ronnie was 5'8", which meant with heels she was nearly 6 feet. I was wearing 2-inch heels, which put me at 5'5". I get a much better workout when Ronnie and I jog together than she does. The phone was ringing as I juggled the key and the foil-wrapped leftovers. Ronnie took the leftovers, and I shoved the door open with my shoulder. I was running across the floor in my high heels before I remembered that I was on vacation, which meant whatever emergency was calling at 2:05 in the morning was not my problem, not for another 2 weeks at least. But old habits die hard, and I was at the phone before I remembered. I actually let the machine pick up while I stood there, heart pounding. I was planning on ignoring it, but I still stood ready to grab the receiver just in case. Loud, booming music, and a man's voice. I didn't recognize the music, but I recognized the voice.
Anita, it's Gregory. Nathaniel's in trouble.
Gregory was one of the were-leopards I'd inherited when I killed their alpha, their leader. As a human, I wasn't really up to the job, but until I found a replacement, even I was better than nothing. Were-animals without a dominant to protect them were anyone's meat, and if someone moved in and slaughtered them, it would sort of be my fault. So I acted as their protector, but the job was more complicated than I'd ever dreamed. Nathaniel was the problem. All the others were rebuilding their lives since their old leader had been killed, but not Nathaniel. He'd had a hard life, abused, raped, pimped out, and topped. Topped meant he'd been someone's slave, as in sex and pain. He was one of the few true submissives I'd ever met, though, admittedly, my pool of acquaintance was limited. I cursed softly and picked up the phone. I'm here, Gregory. What's happened now? Even to me, my voice sounded tired and half angry.
If I had anyone else to call, Anita, I'd call them, but you're it.
He sounded tired and angry, too. Great. Where's Elizabeth? She was supposed to be riding herd on Nathaniel tonight. I'd finally agreed that Nathaniel could start going out to the dominance and submission clubs if he was accompanied by Elizabeth and at least one other were-leopard. Tonight it had been Gregory riding shotgun, but without Elizabeth, Gregory wasn't dominant enough to keep Nathaniel safe. A normal submissive would have been safe in one of the clubs, with someone there to simply say, "No thanks, we'll pass." But Nathaniel was one of those rare subs who are almost incapable of saying no, and there had been hints made that his idea of pain and sex could be very extreme, which meant that he might say yes to things that were very, very bad for him. Where animals can take a lot of injury and not be permanently damaged, but there is a limit. A healthy bottom will say stop when he's had too much or he feels something bad happening, but Nathaniel wasn't that healthy. So he had keepers with him to make sure no one really bad got a hold of him. But it was more than that. A good dominant trusts his sub to say when before the damage is too great. The dom trusts the sub to know his own body and have enough self-preservation to call out before he is in past what his body can take. Nathaniel did not come with that safety feature, which meant a dominant with the best of intentions could end up hurting him badly before realizing Nathaniel wouldn't help himself. I actually had accompanied Nathaniel a few times. As his Nimir Ra, it was sort of my job to interview prospective keepers. I'd gone prepared for the clubs to be one of the lower circles of hell and had been pleasantly shocked. I'd had more trouble with sexual propositions in a normal bar on a Saturday night. In the clubs, everyone was very careful not to impose on you or to be seen as pushy. It was a small community, and if you got a reputation for being obnoxious, you could find yourself blacklisted with no one to play with. I'd found the people in the scene were polite, and once you made it clear you were not there to play, no one bothered you, except tourists. Tourists were posers, people not really into the scene, who liked to dress up and frequent the clubs. They didn't know the rules and hadn't bothered to ask. They probably thought a woman who would come to a place like this would do anything. I'd persuaded them differently. But I'd had to stop going with Nathaniel. The other were-leopards said I gave off so much dominant vibe that no dominant would ever approach Nathaniel while I was with him. Though we'd had offers from Ménage à Trois of every description, I felt like I needed a button that said, "No, I don't want to have a bondage three-way with you. Thanks for asking, though." Elizabeth had supposedly been dominant, but not too much to take Nathaniel out and try to pick him up a date.
"Elizabeth left," Gregory said.
"Without Nathaniel?"
I made it a question.
"Yes."
"Well, that just fries my bacon," I said.
"What?"
he asked.
"I'm angry with Elizabeth."
"It gets better," he said.
"How much better can it be, Gregory? You all assured me that these clubs were safe. A little bondage, a little light slap and tickle. You all convinced me that I couldn't keep Nathaniel away from it indefinitely. You said that they had ways to monitor the area so no one could possibly get hurt. That's what you and Zane and Cherry told me. Hell, I've seen it myself. There are safety monitors everywhere. It's safer than some dates I've had, so what could have possibly gone wrong?"
"We couldn't have anticipated this," he said.
"Just get to the end of the story, Gregory. The foreplay is getting tedious."
There was silence for longer than there should have been. Just the overly loud music.
"Gregory, are you still there?"
"Gregory is indisposed," a man's voice said.
"Who is this?"
"I am Marco, if that helps you, though I doubt that it does."
His voice was cultured, American, but upper crusty.
"New in town, are you?" I asked.
"Something like that," he said.
"Welcome to town. Make sure you go up in the arch while you're here. It's a nice view. But what has your recent arrival in St. Louis got to do with me and mine?"
"We didn't realize it was your pet we had at first. He wasn't the one we were hunting for, but now that we have him, we're keeping him."
"You can't keep him," I said.
"Come down and take him away from us, if you can."
That strangely smooth voice made the threat all the more effective. There was no anger, nothing personal. It sounded like business, and I had no clue what it was about.
"Put Gregory back on," I said.
"I don't think so. He's enjoying some personal time with my friends right now."
"How do I know he's still alive?"
My voice was as unemotional as his. I wasn't feeling anything yet. It was too sudden, too unexpected, like coming in on the middle of a movie.
"No one's dead. Yet," the man said.
"How do I know that?"
He was quiet for a second, then.
"What sort of people are you used to dealing with that you would ask if we've killed him first thing?"
It's been a rough year. Now put Gregory on the phone, because until I know he's alive and he tells me the others are, this negotiation is stalled.
How do you know we are negotiating?
Marco asked. Call it a hunch.
My, you are direct.
You have no idea how direct I can be, Marco. Put Gregory on the phone. There was the music-filled silence, and more music, but no voices. Gregory? Gregory, are you there? Is anyone there? Shit, I thought.
I'm afraid that your kitty cat won't squall for us. A point of pride, I think.
Put the receiver to his ear and let me talk to him.
As you wish.
More of the loud music. I spoke as if I was sure that Gregory was listening. Gregory, I need to know you're alive. I need to know that Nathaniel and everyone else is alive. Talk to me, Gregory. His voice came squeezed tight, as if he were gritting his teeth.
Yes.
Yes, what? They're all alive?
Yes.
What are they doing to you? He screamed into the phone, and the sound raised the hairs on my neck and danced down my arms in goosebumps. The sound stopped abruptly. Gregory? Gregory! I was yelling against the techno beat of the music, but no one was answering. Marco came back on the line.
They are all alive, if not quite well. The one they call Nathaniel is a lovely young man, all that long auburn hair and the most extraordinary violet eyes. So pretty. It would be a shame to spoil all that beauty. Of course, this one is lovely too, blonde, blue-eyed. Someone told me that they both work as strippers. Is that true?
I wasn't numb anymore. I was scared and angry, and I still had not a clue to why this was happening. My voice came out almost even, almost calm.
Yeah, it's true. You're new in town, Marco, so you don't know me. But trust me, you don't want to do this.
Perhaps not, but my alpha does.
Ah, shapeshifter politics. I hated shapeshifter politics.
Why? The were-leopards are no threat to anyone.
Ours is not to reason why. Ours is but to do and die.
A literate kidnapper. Refreshing.
What do you want, Marco?
My alpha wants you to come down and rescue your cats, if you can.
What club are you at?
Narcissus in chains.
And he hung up. 2.
Damn it!
What's happened?
Ronnie asked. I'd almost forgotten her. She didn't belong in this part of my life, but there she was, leaning against the kitchen cabinets, searching my face, looking worried.
I'll take care of it.
She gripped my arm.
You gave me this speech about wanting your friends back, about not wanting to push us all away. Did you mean it, or was it just talk?
I took a deep breath and let it out. I told her what the other side of the conversation had been.
And you don't have any clue what this is about?
She asked. No, I don't.
That's odd. Usually stuff like this builds up. It doesn't just drop out of the blue.
I nodded. I know.
Star 69 will ring back whatever number just called you.
What good will that do?
It will let you know if they're really at this club or whether it's just a trap for you.
Not just another pretty face, are you? I said. She smiled.
I'm a trained detective. We know about these things.
The humor didn't quite reach her eyes, but she was trying. I dialed and the phone rang for what seemed forever. Then another male voice answered.
Yeah?
Is this Narcissus in chains?
Yeah, who's this?
I need to speak with Gregory.
Don't know any Gregory, he said.
Who is this? I asked.
This is a freaking payphone, lady. I just picked up.
Then he hung up, too. It seemed to be my night for it. They called from a payphone at the club, I said.
Well, at least you know where they are,
Ronnie said. Do you know where the club is? I asked. Ronnie shook her head.
Not my kind of scene.
Mine either. In fact, the only card-carrying dominance and submission players that I knew personally were all at the club waiting to be saved. Who did I know that might know where the club was and something about its reputation? I couldn't trust what the were-leopards had told me about it being a safe place. Obviously, they'd been wrong. One name sprang to mind. The only one I knew to call that might know where Narcissus in Chains was and what kind of trouble I'd be in if I went inside. Jean-Claude. Since I was dealing with shapeshifter politics, it might have made sense to call Richard, with him being a werewolf and all. But the shapeshifters were a very clannish lot. One type of animal rarely crossed boundaries to help another. Frustrating, but true. The exception was the treaty between the werewolves and the were-rats, but everyone else was left to fend and squabble and bleed among themselves. Oh, if some small group got out of hand and attracted too much unwanted police attention, the wolves and rats would discipline them. But short of that, no one seemed to want to interfere with each other. That was one of the reasons I was still stuck babysitting the were-leopards. Also, Richard didn't know any more about the DNS subculture than I did. Maybe less. If you're wanting to ask questions about the sexual fringe, Jean-Claude is definitely your guy. He may not participate, but he seems to know who's doing what and to whom and where. Or I hoped he did. If it had just been my life at stake, I probably wouldn't have called either of the boys. But if I got killed doing this, that left no one to rescue Nathaniel and the rest. Unacceptable. Ronnie had kicked off her high heels.
I didn't bring my gun, but I'm sure you have a spare.
I shook my head. You're not going. Anger makes her gray eyes the color of storm clouds.
The hell I'm not.
Ronnie, these are shapeshifters and you're human.
So are you,
she said. Because of Jean-Claude's vampire marks, I'm a little more than that. I can take damage that would kill you.
You can't go in there alone, she said.
Her arms were crossed under her breasts, her face set in angry, stubborn lines. I don't plan on going in alone.
It's because I'm not a shooter, isn't it?
You don't kill easily, Ronnie, no shame in that, but I can't take you into a gang of shapeshifters unless I know that you'll shoot to kill if you have to. I gripped her upper arms. She stayed stiff and angry under my touch. It would kill a piece of me to lose you, Ronnie. It would kill a bigger piece to know that you died because of some shit of mine. You can't hesitate with these people. You can't treat them like they're human. If you do, you die. She was shaking her head.
Call the police.
I stepped away from her. No.
Damn it, Anita. Damn it.
Ronnie, there are rules, and one of those rules is you don't take pack or pard business to the police. The main reason for that rule was that the police tended to frown on fights for dominance that ended with dead bodies on the ground, but no need to tell Ronnie that.
It's a stupid rule, she said.
Maybe, but it's still the way business is done with the shifters, no matter what flavor they are. She sat down at the small two-seater breakfast table on its little raised platform.
Who's going to be your backup, then? Richard doesn't kill any easier than I do.
That was half true, but I let it slide. No, I want someone at my back tonight who will do what needs doing. No flinching. Her eyes were dark. Dark with anger.
Jean-Claude.
She made his name a curse. I nodded.
Are you sure he didn't plan this to get you back into his life? Excuse me. Death?
He knows me too well to screw with my people. He knows what I'd do if he hurt them. Puzzlement flowed through the anger, softening her eyes, her face.
I hate him, but I know you love him. Could you really kill him? Could you really stare down the barrel of a gun and pull the trigger on him?
I just looked at her, and I knew without a mirror that my eyes had grown distant, cold. It's hard for brown eyes to be cold, but I'd been managing it lately. Something very like fear slid behind her eyes. I don't know if she was afraid for me or of me. I preferred the first to the last.
You could do it. Jesus, Anita. You've known Jean-Claude longer than I've known Louis. I could never hurt Louis, no matter what he did.
I shrugged. It would destroy me to do it, I think. It's not like I'd live happily ever after if I survived at all. There's a very real chance that the vampire marks would drag me down to the grave with him.
Another good reason not to kill him, she said.
If he's behind the scream that Gregory gave over the phone, then he'll need better reasons to keep breathing than love, or lust, or my possible death.
I don't understand that, Anita. I don't understand that at all.
I know, I said. And I thought to myself it was one of the reasons Ronnie and I hadn't been seeing as much of each other as we once had. I got tired of explaining myself to her. No, of justifying myself to her. You're my friend, my best friend, I thought. But I don't understand you anymore. Ronnie, I can't arm wrestle shapeshifters and vampires. I will lose a fair fight. The only way I survive, the only way my leopards survive, is because the other shifters fear me. They fear my threat. I'm only as good as my threat, Ronnie.
So you'll go down there and kill them?
I didn't say that.
But you will.
I'll try to avoid it, I said. She tucked her knees up, wrapping her arms around those long legs. She'd managed to get a tiny prick in one of the hose. The hole was shiny with clear nail polish. She'd carried the polish in her purse for just such emergencies.
I'd carried a gun and hadn't even taken a purse.
If you get arrested, call and I'll bail you out.
I shook my head. If I get caught wasting three or more people in a public area, there won't be any bail tonight. The police probably won't even finish questioning me until long past dawn.
How can you be so calm about this? She asked.
I was beginning to remember why Ronnie and I had started drifting apart. I'd had almost the exact conversation with Richard once when an assassin had come to town to kill me. I gave the same answer. Having hysterics won't help anything, Ronnie.
But you're not angry about it.
Oh, I am angry, I said. She shook her head.
No, I mean you're not outraged that this is happening. You don't seem surprised. Not like...
She shrugged.
Not like you should be.
You mean not like you would be? I held up a hand before she could answer. I don't have time to debate moral philosophy, Ronnie. I picked up the phone. I'm going to call Jean-Claude.
I keep urging you to dump the vampire and marry Richard, but maybe there's more than one reason why you can't let him go.
I dialed the number for Circus of the Damned from memory, and Ronnie just kept talking to my back.
Maybe you're not willing to give up a lover who's colder than you are.
The phone was ringing. There are clean sheets on the guest bed, Ronnie. Sorry I won't be able to share girl talk tonight. I kept my back to her. I heard her stand in a crinkle of skirts and knew when she walked out. I kept my back facing the room until I knew she was gone. It wouldn't do either of us any good to let her see me cry. 3. Jean-Claude wasn't at the Circus of the Damned. The voice on the other end of the phone at the circus didn't recognize me and wouldn't believe I was Anita Blake, Jean-Claude's sometimes sweetie. So I'd been reduced to calling his other businesses. I'd tried Guilty Pleasures, his strip club, but he wasn't there. I tried Danse Macabre, his newest enterprise, but I was beginning to wonder if Jean-Claude had simply told everyone that he wasn't in if I called. The thought bothered me a lot. I'd worried that after so long, Richard might finally tell me to go to hell, that he'd had enough of my indecision. It had never occurred to me that Jean-Claude might not wait. If I was so unsure how I felt about him, why was my stomach squeezed tight with a growing sense of loss? The feeling had nothing to do with the were-leopards and their problems. It had everything to do with me and the fact that I suddenly felt lost. But it turned out he was at Danse Macabre, and he took my call. I had a moment for my stomach to unclench and my breath to ease out. Then he was on the phone, and I was struggling to keep my metaphysical shields in place. I hated metaphysics. Preternatural biology is still biology. Metaphysics is magic, and I'm still not comfortable with it. For 6 months when I wasn't working, I was meditating, studying with a very wise psychic named Marianne, learning ritual magic so I could control my God-given abilities, and so I could block the marks that bound me to Richard and Jean-Claude. An aura is like your personal protection, your personal energy. When it's healthy, it keeps you safe, like skin. But you get a hole in it, and infection can get inside. My aura had two holes in it, one for each of the men. I suspected that their auras had holes in them, too, which put us all at risk. I'd blocked up my holes. Then only a few weeks ago, I'd come up against a nasty creature, a would-be god, a new category even for me. It had been powerful enough to strip all my careful work away, leaving me raw and open again. Only the intervention of a local witch had saved me from being eaten from the aura down. I didn't have 6 more months of celibacy, meditation, and patience in me. The holes were there, and the only way to fill them was with Jean-Claude and Richard. That's what Marianne said, and I trusted her in a way that I trusted few others. Jean-Claude's voice hit me over the phone like a velvet slap. My breath caught in my throat, and I could do nothing but feel the flow of his voice, the presence of him like something alive, flowing over my skin. His voice has always been one of Jean-Claude's best things, but this was ridiculous. This was over the phone. How could I possibly see him in person and maintain my shields, let alone my composure?
I know you are there, ma petite. Did you call merely to hear the sound of my voice?
That was closer to the truth than was comfortable. No. No. I still couldn't gather my thoughts. I was like an athlete who had let her training go. I just couldn't lift the same amount of weight, and there was weight to wading through Jean-Claude's power. When I still didn't say anything, he spoke again.
Ma petite, to what do I owe this honor? Why have you deigned to call me?
His voice was bland, but there was a hint of something in it. Reproach, perhaps. I guess I had it coming. I rallied the troops and tried to sound like an intelligent human being, not always one of my best things.
It's been 6 months. I am aware of that, ma petite.
He was being condescending. I hated that. It made me a little angry. The anger helped clear my head a little. If you'll stop interrupting, I'll tell you why I called.
My heart is all aflutter with anticipation.
I wanted to hang up. He was being an asshole, and part of me thought I might deserve the treatment, which made me even angrier. I'm always angriest when I think I'm in the wrong. I'd been a coward for months, and I was still a coward. I was afraid to be close to him, afraid of what I'd do. Damn it, Anita, get a hold of yourself. Sarcasm is my department, I said.
And what is my department?
I'm about to ask you for a favor, I said.
Really?
He said it as if he might not grant it. Please, Jean-Claude, I'm asking for help. I don't do that often.
That is certainly true. What would you have of me, ma petite? You know that you have but to ask, and it will be yours, no matter how angry I may be with you.
I let that comment go because I didn't know what to do about it. Do you know a club in the city called Narcissus in Chains? He was quiet for a second or two.
Oui.
Can you give me directions and meet me there?
Do you know what sort of a club this place is?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
It's a bondage club, I know.
Unless the last 6 months has changed you greatly, ma petite, that is not one of your preferences.
Not mine, no.
Your were-leopards are misbehaving again?
Something like that. I told him what had happened.
I do not know this Marco,
I didn't figure you did.
But you did think that I knew where the club was?
I was hoping.
I will meet you there with some of my people. Or will you allow only me to ride to your rescue?
He sounded amused now, which was better than angry, I guess. Bring who you need.
You trust my judgment?
In this, yeah.
But not in all things, he said softly.
I don't trust anyone in all things, Jean-Claude. He sighed.
So young to be so jaded.
I'm cynical, not jaded.
And the difference is what, ma petite?
You're jaded. He laughed then, the sound caressing me like the brush of a hand. It made things low in my body clench.
Ah, he said, that explains all the differences.
Just give me directions, please. I added the please to speed things along.
They will not harm your were-leopards too greatly, I think. The club is run by shapeshifters, and they will smell too much blood and take matters into their own hands. It is one of the reasons Narcissus in Chains is no man's land, a neutral place for the fringe of our groups. Your leopards were right. It is usually a very safe place.
Well, Gregory wasn't screaming because he felt safe.
Perhaps not, but I know the owner. Narcissus would be very angry if someone became overzealous in his club.
Narcissus? I don't know the name. Well, I know the Greek mythology stuff, but I don't recognize it as local.
I would not expect you to. He does not often leave his club. But I will call him and he will patrol your cats for you. He will not rescue them, but he will make sure no further damage is done.
You trust Narcissus to do this?
Oui.
Jean-Claude had his faults, but if he trusted someone, he was usually right.
Okay. And thank you. You are most welcome.
He drew a breath, then said quietly,
Would you have called if you had not needed my help? Would you ever have called?
I'd been dreading this question from either Jean-Claude or Richard, but I finally had an answer. I'll answer your question as best I can, but call it a hunch. It may be a long conversation. I need to know my people are safe before we start dissecting our relationship.
Relationship? Is that what we have?
His voice was very dry.
Jean-Claude. No, ma petite. I will call Narcissus now and save your cats, but only if you promise that when I call back, we will finish this conversation.
Promise.
Your word, he said.
Yes.
Very well, ma petite. Until we speak again.
He hung up. I hung up the phone and stood there. Was it cowardly to want to call someone else, anyone else, so the phone would be busy and we wouldn't have to have our little talk? Yeah, it was cowardly, but tempting. I hated talking about my personal life, especially to the people most intimately involved in it. I had just about enough time to change out of the skirt outfit when the phone rang. I jumped and answered it with my pulse in my throat. I was really dreading this conversation. Hello? I said.
Narcissus will see to your cat's safety. Now, where were we?
He was silent for a heartbeat.
Oh, yes. Would you ever have called if you had not needed my help?
The woman I'm studying with, Marianne, he said. Yes, Marianne. Anyway, she says that I can't keep blocking the holes in my aura. That the only way to be safe from preternatural creepy crawlies is to fill the holes with what they were meant to hold. Silence on the other end of the phone. Silence for so long that I said, Jean-Claude, are you still there?
I am here.
You don't sound happy about this.
Do you know what you are saying, Anita?
It was always a bad sign when he used my real name. I think so.
I want this very clear between us, ma petite. I do not want you coming back to me later, crying that you did not understand how tightly this would bind us. If you allow Richard and me to truly feel the marks upon your body, we will share our auras, our energy, our magic.
We're already doing that, Jean-Claude.
In part, ma petite, but those are side effects of the marks. This will be a willing, knowledgeable joining. Once done, I do not think it can be undone without great damage to all of us.
It was my turn to sigh. How many vampire challenges to your authority have there been while I've been off meditating?
A few,
he said, voice cautious. More than a few, I'd bet, because they sense that your defenses are not complete. You had trouble backing them down without killing them, didn't you?
Let us say that I am glad that there were no serious challengers over the last year.
You'd have lost without Richard and me to back you up, and you couldn't shield yourself without us there to touch. That worked when I was in town with you. Touching, being with each other helped us plug into each other's power. It offset the problem.
Oui, he said softly.
I didn't know, Jean-Claude. I'm not sure it would have made a difference, but I didn't know. God, Richard must be desperate. He doesn't kill like we do. His bluff is all that keeps the werewolves from tearing each other apart, and with two gaping holes in his most intimate defenses? I let my voice trail off, but I still remembered the cold horror I'd felt when I realized how much I'd endangered all of us.
Richard has had difficulties, ma petite. But we each have only one chink in our armor, the one that only you can heal. He was driven to merge his energies with mine. As you say, his bluff is very important to him.
I didn't know, and I'm sorry for that. All I've been thinking about was how scared I was of being overwhelmed by the two of you. Marianne told me the truth when she thought I was ready to hear it.
And are you done being frightened of us, ma petite?
His voice was very careful when he asked, as if he were carrying a very full cup of very hot liquid up a long and narrow staircase. I shook my head, realized he couldn't see it, and said, I'm not brave. I'm pretty much terrified. Terrified that if I do this, there is no going back, that maybe I'm fooling myself about a choice. Maybe there is no choice and hasn't been for a long time. But however we end up arranging the bedrooms, I can't let us all go around with gaping metaphysical wounds. Too many things will sense the weakness and exploit it.
Like the creature you met in New Mexico,
he said, voice still as cautious as I'd ever heard it. Yeah, I said.
Are you saying that tonight you will agree to letting us merge the marks, that we will at last close these, as you so colorfully put it, wounds?
If it doesn't endanger my leopards, yeah. We need to do it as soon as possible. I'd hate to make the big decision and then have one of us get killed before we could batten down the hatches. I heard him sigh as if some great tension had left him.
You do not know how long I have waited for you to understand all this.
You could have told me.
You would not have believed me. You would have thought it was another trick to bind you closer to me.
You're right. I wouldn't have believed you.
Will Richard be meeting us at the club as well?
I was quiet for a heartbeat. No, I'm not going to call him.
Why ever not? It is a shapeshifter difficulty more than a vampire one.
You know why not.
You fear he will be too squeamish to allow you to do what needs doing to save your leopards.
Yeah.
Perhaps, Jean-Claude said.
You aren't going to tell me to call him?
Why would I ask you to invite my chief rival for your affections to this little tête-à-tête?
That would be foolish.
Many things, but foolish is not one of them.
That was certainly true. Okay, give me directions, and I'll meet you and your people at the club.
First, ma petite, what are you wearing?
Excuse me?
Clothes, ma petite. What clothes are you wearing?
Is this a joke? Because I don't have time.
It is not an idle question, ma petite. The sooner you answer,
the sooner we can all leave. I wanted to argue, but if Jean-Claude said he had a point, he probably did. I told him what I was wearing.
You surprise me, ma petite. With a little effort, it should do nicely.
What effort?
I suggest you add boots to your ensemble. The ones I purchased for you would do very well.
I am not wearing 5-inch spikes anywhere, Jean-Claude. I'd break an ankle.
I planned on you wearing those boots just for me, ma petite. I was thinking of the other boots with the milder heels that I bought when you were so very angry about the others.
Oh. Why do I have to change shoes?
Because, delicate flower that you are, you have the eyes of a policeman, and so it would be better if you wore leather boots instead of high heels. It would be better if you remember that you are trying to move through the club as quickly and smoothly as possible. No one will help you find your leopards if they think you are an outsider, especially a policeman.
Nobody ever mistakes me for a cop.
No, but they begin to mistake you for something that smells of guns and death. Look harmless tonight, ma petite, until it is time to be dangerous.
I thought this friend of yours, this Narcissus, would just escort us in.
He is not my friend, and I told you the club is neutral ground. Narcissus will see that no great harm comes to your cat, but that is all. He will not let you come barging into his world, like the proverbial bull in the china shop. That he will not allow, nor will he allow us to bring in a small army of our own. He is the leader of the were-hyenas, and they are the only army allowed inside the club. There is no Ulfric or master of the city within its walls. You have only the dominance you bring with you, and your body to see you through.
I'll have a gun, I said.
But a gun will not get you into the upper rooms.
What will?
Trust me. I will find a way.
I didn't like the sound of that at all. Why is it that most of the time whenever I ask you for help, it's never a case where we can just run in and start shooting?
And why is it, ma petite, that when you do not invite me, that it is almost always a case where you run in and shoot everything that moves?
Point taken, I said.
What are your priorities for the night?
He asked. I knew what he meant. I want the were-leopards safe.
And if they have been harmed?
I want vengeance.
More than their safety?
No, safety first. Vengeance is a luxury.
Good. And if one or more is dead?
I don't want any of us going to jail. But eventually, if not tonight, another night, they die. I listened to myself say it and knew that I meant it.
There is no mercy in you, ma petite.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
No, it is merely an observation.
I stood there holding the phone, waiting to be shocked at what I was proposing. But I wasn't. I said, I don't want to kill anyone if I don't have to.
That is not true, ma petite.
Fine, if they've killed my people, I want them dead. But I decided in New Mexico that I didn't want to be a sociopath, so I'm trying to act as if I'm not. So let's try to keep the body count low tonight, okay?
As you wish, he said.
Then he added,
do you really think that you can change the nature of what you are, merely by wishing it?
Are you asking if I can stop being a sociopath, since I already am one? A moment of silence, then.
I think that is what I'm asking.
I don't know. But if I don't pull myself back from the brink soon, Jean-Claude, there won't be any going back.
I hear fear in your voice, ma petite.
Yeah, you do.
What do you fear?
I fear that by giving in to you and Richard that I'll lose myself. I fear that by not giving in to you and Richard, I'll lose one of you. I fear that I'll get us killed because I'm thinking too much. I fear that I'm already a sociopath and there is no going back. Ronnie said that one of the reasons that I can't give you up and just settle down with Richard is that I can't give up a boyfriend who's colder than I am.
I am sorry, ma petite.
I wasn't sure exactly what he was apologizing for, but I accepted it anyway.
Me too.
Give me directions to the club. I'll meet you there. He gave me directions, and I read them back to him. We hung up. Neither of us said goodbye. Once upon a time, we'd have ended the conversation with, "Je t'aime." I love you. Once upon a time. 4. The club was over the river on the Illinois side, along with most of the other questionable clubs. Vampire-run businesses got a grandfather clause to operate in St. Louis proper, but the rest of the human-run clubs, and lycanthropes still counted legally as human, had to go into Illinois to avoid pesky zoning problems. Some of the zoning problems weren't even on the books, weren't even laws at all. But it was strange how many problems the bureaucrats could find when they didn't want a club in their fair city. If the vampires weren't such a big draw for tourists, the bureaucrats would have probably found a way to get rid of them, too. I finally found parking about 2 blocks from the club. It meant a walk to the club in an area of town that most women wouldn't want to be alone in after dark. Of course, most women wouldn't be armed. A gun doesn't cure all ills, but it's a start. I also had a knife sheath around each calf, very high up, so that the hilts came up on the side of my knees. I wasn't really comfortable that way, but I couldn't think of any other place to put knives so I could get to them easily. There was a very good chance I'd have bruises on my knees after tonight. Oh well. I also had a black belt in judo and was making progress in kenpo, a type of karate, one with fewer power moves and more moves using balance. I was as prepared as I could get for the wilds of the big city. Of course, I usually don't walk around looking like bait. My skirt was so short that even with boots that came up to mid-thigh, there was a good inch between the hem and the top of the boots. I'd put a jacket on for the drive, but had left it in the car because I didn't want to be carrying it around all night. I'd been in just enough clubs, whatever flavor they were, to know that inside it would be hot. So the goosebumps that traveled over my bare back and arms weren't from fear, but from the damp, chill air. I forced myself not to rub my arms as I walked, and to at least look like I wasn't cold or uncomfortable. Actually, the boots only had 2-inch heels, and they were comfortable to walk in. Not as comfortable as my Nikes, but then, what is? But for dress shoes, the boots weren't bad. If I could have left the knives home, they'd have been peachy. There was one other bit of protection that I'd added. Metaphysical shields come in different varieties. You can shield yourself with almost anything. Metal, rock, plants, fire, water, wind, earth, etc. Everyone has different shields because it's a very individual choice. It has to work for your own personal mindset. You can have 2 psychics both using stone, but the shields won't be the same. Some people simply visualize rock, the thought of it, its essence, and that's sufficient. If something tries to attack them, they are safe behind the thought of rock. Another psychic might see a stone wall, like a garden wall around an old house, and that would do the same thing. For me, the shield had to be a tower. All shields are like bubbles that surround you completely, just like circles of power. I'd always understood this when I raised the dead, but for shielding, I needed to see it in my head. So I imagined a stone tower, completely enclosed, no windows, no chinks, smooth and dark inside with only what I allowed in or out. Talking about shielding always made me feel like I was having a psychotic break and sharing my delusions. But it worked. And when I didn't shield, things tried to hurt me. It had only been in the last 2 weeks that Marianne had discovered that I hadn't really understood shielding at all. I'd thought it was just a matter of how powerful your aura was and how you could reinforce it. She said the only reason I'd been able to get by with that for as long as I had was that I was simply that powerful. But the shielding goes outside the aura, like a wall around a castle, an extra defense. The innermost defense is a healthy aura. Hopefully by the end of the night, I'd have one of those. I turned the corner and found a line of people that stretched down the block. Great. Just what I needed. I didn't stop at the end of the line. I kept walking towards the door.